Hello and welcome.
You are tuned in to Radio Free Winnipeg on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Radio Free Winnipeg's mission is to challenge manicured discourses and illuminate the issues and history erased in the mainstream.
We broadcast out of the University of Winnipeg in downtown Winnipeg on Treaty 1 territory, homeland of the Red River Métis. We are your hosts, Greg Gallinger
and Scott Price. All right, it is March the 26th, 2017. This is Radio Free Winnipeg. Thanks for tuning in or downloading the show on, maybe it's iTunes, maybe you're listening to it on your phone. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. Got a great interview for you today. Who are we talking to today, Greg?
Aaron.
Aaron from the Rebel Beat. Aaron Lakoff.
Yeah.
The Rebel Beat is... it's a podcast.
Started off as a community radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of morphed into a podcast.
Yeah. Aaron explains all the stuff about the show, so we don't have to go too much. But basically, the theme of it is radical music and politics, and specifically music with a radical politics with it. So it's a whole show based on that. It usually has interviews and all that kind of stuff. It's a great show. I think people who like Radio Free Winnipeg will probably enjoy the Rebel Beat. So, you know, for the show notes and everything, we'll put links to the Rebel Beats, you know, the podcast feed, the website, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it kind of fits with some of the other stuff we've been.
Yeah. It's kind of right up our alley. You know, it's pretty in tune with, some of the other stuff we've done, even some of our, you know, music shows,
mm-hmm.
as they've kind of been that sort of theme, sort of rebel music, political music themed. Yeah. So I guess, Scott, you first introduced me to the Rebel Beat when we were talking different cool podcasts.
Yeah.
And, I have to say, I quite enjoy it. I do keep making the mistake of thinking it's U of T's community radio station, because it's CKUT, right?
He comes out of CKUT, and I think he's still involved, right. Which is based out of Montreal.
Right, yeah. But every time I hear CKUT, I always think it's U of T, right?
Oh, okay.
I always think it's the University of Toronto's radio station, but right. that's C-U-I-T? I don't know.
You probably know the call sign.
I think it's C-U-I-T.
Okay.
I just always confuse it, yeah.
Right.
So when he was like, yeah, I'm in Montreal, I'm like, oh, yes. Right.
He just did another thing too, is if you go on the website, he also did an interview with Dave Zirin, so who we had on the show not long ago. So
there's a Venn diagram of podcast radio shows happening here.
Totally. So without further ado, here is Aaron from the Rebel Beat.
So my name is Aaron Lakoff. I sometimes go by Aaron Maiden. And I am the host of the Rebel Beat podcast. I live in Montreal. And I guess we'll get into talking more about the podcast later. But, I mean, really, essentially, it's a music show that's really inspired by, like, my political beliefs and a lot of the community organizing work that I've done over the years. So kind of looking for a platform to bring class war to the dance floor, as I like to say on the show.
I like that tagline.
So I was doing it as a weekly show on CKUT, but then I went back to grad school.
Oh yeah.
And it was too much to keep doing it as a weekly show, especially because of like the amount of research that I try to put into it now, mm-hmm. finding really good guests and getting all the music. So I stopped, you know, because like I said before, I've been doing this ska show for like 10 years. And then I decided a couple of years ago, I wanted to kind of flip that and turn it into the Rebel Beat. So the show kind of morphed and became a political music show. Did the Rebel Beat on CKUT for about a year and then had to take it off the airwaves. But what's really cool is my friend Ryan Harvey, who's a radical folk singer based in Baltimore, he got in touch with me and he was like, why are you stopping the Rebel Beat? And I was like, oh, I'm going back to school, I don't have any time. He's like, no, you got to keep doing it. He's like, you could do it in the podcast with Firebrand Records. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. I've never really heard of a record label doing a podcast. So I took him up on the offer, and yeah, I mean, it's been really great doing it, because it's like I love Firebrand Records so much. It's, for people who don't know about it, they're a radical record label started by Ryan Harvey and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. They put out some amazing stuff since they started, and what I like about it, so it's very much like, again, I want to give props to Winnipeg and the G7 Welcoming Committee Records, hugely inspiring record label to me when I was growing up. So it's kind of like, it's very much similar in its mandate to G7, which is like just to pump out political music. Although at the time G7 was like putting out like books and patches and all sorts of stuff, which is like how I learned about people like Ward Churchill and Noam Chomsky and, you know, anyways. I think G7 was probably a little bit more punk in its focus. I know they had definitely had some records that weren't exclusively punk, but what's cool about Firebrand is it's really like basically like a ton of different genres. So they've got, you know, people like Son of Nun, who's an amazing like radical hip hop MC out of Baltimore. People like Bells Roar, they do kind of like, it's hard to even describe their music, but kind of like indie pop would be the best way you could like fit it in a box, but a little bit more ephemeral, kind of queer folk, I guess. They're based in Albany, New York. They've got Egyptian artists on that label. It's been really exciting to work with Firebrand.
What was the first, like, do you know, like, what was the first, like, politically radical music you were exposed to? And how did that sort of shape you politically and personally?
Actually, for that, I got to give huge props to Winnipeg and a lot of the scene out of Winnipeg, the punk scene, and specifically Propagandhi. I remember being in, like, French class in grade 10. I grew up in Toronto, and so I must have been, gosh, like, I don't know, I'm going to guess, like 13, 14 years old, and it was not long after Less Talk, More Rock came out, Propagandhi's album. And a friend of mine passed it to me in French class, you know, just like, whatever, we were kind of goofing off, and he's like, oh yeah, like, we were kind of like getting into like skate punk at the time, as a lot of teenagers do. And he's like, you got to check out this album, I just listened to it, it's awesome. And I remember that CD had like the craziest liner notes. I don't know if you guys are, you know, have seen that CD, but like,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it came out, like, it probably came out at least 20 years ago. And I just remember reading through, it was nothing like, you know, because like other punk bands I listened to at the time were like, whatever, like NoFX and Lagwagon, these like stupid punk bands that would just sing about like drinking and girls and stuff like that. And actually, it's kind of ironic because like Propagandhi would end up getting into like a huge feud with Fat Mike and NoFX about politics, and, you know, NoFX's support of the Democratic Party. But anyways, I digress. I just remember so specifically like reading through the liner notes of Less Talk, More Rock and just getting so inspired, because it was really, I think it was like the first time I ever read about anarchism. It was the first time I ever read about feminism, anti-capitalism. And so just like being exposed to those ideas as a kid or as a teenager is like, you know, incredibly eye-opening. And then in Toronto at the time, there was a really cool scene around the ARA, the anti-racist action. So unfortunately in the 90s, and I think, you know, it's like, it's kind of funny because I think we're living through a little bit of an echo of this now, unfortunately, with Trump in the U.S. and then kind of the rise of the far right everywhere. But I remember in the 90s, there was kind of like a bit of a spike of like neo-fascist organizing in Toronto. And so groups like ARA and also OCAP, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, got quite active around confronting the far right in the streets. And so I was never really a part of that, but what I was a part of was like the ARA would pretty much every month host like these Rock Against Racism shows downtown, and they'd have a lot of like really amazing local punk and ska bands come up. I remember a lot of ska bands from Montreal coming to play, And it was just like, it was a pretty awesome place to be. Like, you know, again, they're all ages shows, which was really important for me at the time, being like a kid, just being able to go and, you know, listening to the music there, but also seeing all the groups that were tabling. So everything from like, yeah, again, like OCAP and the ARA to like Youth for Socialist Action to like anarchist groups, and just being exposed to like the music and politics at that time really kind of like laid the groundwork for what I would get into later. And then I got really into ska music, which I think for a lot of people just, again, kind of says like immature lyrics, whatever, like sets kind of like a bit of a party tone. But for me, ska was always really political because I associated it very much to that kind of rock against racism scene in Toronto. And of course, if you look at the history of ska, it's super political, right? Like going all the way back to Jamaica, being very much like the history or like the music of the shanty towns of Kingston. And so having kind of that working class vibe to it. And then, of course, in the UK as well, when Jamaican immigrants brought it over there, and you had bands like the Specials and the Selector who were mixing, you know, black youth, white youth, this like message of unity coming together against racism. And I did a ska radio show at CKUT in Montreal for about 10 years and was always really trying to bring that politics back into ska in ways that I'm not sure if it was always very successful, but I tried.
It's funny how often those liner notes from Less Talk, More Rock come up. Because I know personally that was very similar to my experience as well. I got that record and just poured through it and probably read through, you know, those liner notes thousands of times.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's so interesting talking to Canadian radicals who are around my age who grew up listening to Propagandhi, and like how many people will cite Propagandhi as like their entry point in the radical politics. And I think it's really special, you know, because it's like the only other kind of comparable band I can think of is like Rage Against the Machine, right? Like so many people grew up listening to them. And I mean, Rage, obviously we're on like a totally different level. Like I think way more people around the world were listening to Rage, but like, and you know, Propagandhi maybe never really broke out of the punk scene that they were in, but it's still, yeah, it's so cool to see kind of the reverberations that they continue to have as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting how many bands that come through Winnipeg, too, will shout them out on stage.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, talking about radical music and what that is there a definition in your mind of what radical music or radical political music is?
Yeah, I mean, I try to look at it from, like, different perspectives. I try to look at it as, like, obviously music with lyrical content that, like, as I kind of like to think about it, like, you know, or even to reference Chuck D from Public Enemy, who said that, like, you know, rap music is like the CNN of the ghetto. I really love to look at music in a way of, like, it's this really powerful platform to kind of just talk about the day's issues and to get it out in an artistic and creative way that I think is a lot more easy for people to kind of to absorb. So there's the lyrical content, but I also just really like to think about it in terms of like music that inspires movements as well, whether the music itself is political or not. So about a year ago on my show, I did a whole special on Kurdish resistance music, and definitely some of that is political, but you know, I was interviewing some Kurdish activists here in Montreal who were telling me that, like, sometimes the really political music for them isn't necessarily the tunes that have the uber militant lyrics, but it can just be, like, music that, like, fires people up when they're, like, going out to the front lines, you know? Mm-hmm. I think more and more I've been really getting into electronic music that, you know, like, obviously got to shout out A Tribe Called Red. Like, I think what they're doing is absolutely incredible in terms of like putting out music that's so inspiring to Indigenous youth in this country, because it's like It's creating a whole new sound. It's creating a whole new aesthetic that is like really uniquely drawing on indigenous tradition, but doing so in a very modern way. And I mean, the last album that A Tribe Called Red put out, the Hallucination album, I'd say hands down was like my favorite album of 2016. And then, you know, just to shout out like a local boy here in Montreal, Catronata, you know, he won the Polaris Music Prize for best album last year. And I think his music's brilliant because it's like, it's definitely not political in its lyrical content. Like it barely got any lyrics at all. But, you know, he himself as like a Black Haitian queer youth, like I think he's like definitely under 25, is again like really inspiring people from like these communities, especially like Black queer communities, to come out and to be putting this extremely creative music out into the world. So yeah, I think it's like really maybe just trying to find ins into music that moves people in different ways.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to ever see Tribe called Red live, but their live show is something incredible. I remember they played a free show for U of W here a couple of years ago.
Right
on the front lawn, and that was the first time I had kind of encountered them, and it was incredible. And then saw them again at a show that they actually headlined, and yeah, it's amazing. Like the crowd that they draw, and the you know, you can kind of feel the energy.
For sure, and I mean like. Yeah, I mean, they're just absolutely incredible, those guys. And, like, not only in terms of, like, their music, but also, like, the activism that they do when they're not on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, just recently they did it wasn't the whole band, but it was, like, members of A Tribe Called Red did a benefit here in Montreal for the victims of the Quebec City mosque shooting. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, Ian Campo, I know, is, like, one of the DJ Indians. Mm-hmm. He's, like, you know, really outspoken around the issue of like racist, like anti-indigenous mascots in sports. So many things. I mean, yeah, like when they did a show in Toronto a few months ago, like it was like one of those big outdoor shows, like the one in Winnipeg, and they had like people up on stage with like No Dapple, like the Dakota Access Pipeline signs. So like, I just love it how even if, you know, again, it's like, it's electronic music. Some of their music does have lyrics that are very political. But, like, even their electronic tunes without lyrics still manage to convey these, like, amazing, like, anti-colonial messages.
Hmm. Yeah, I kind of wonder, too, about, like, I mean, definitely, like, what you were talking about with your exposure with, like, you know, propaganda and you know, that kind of stuff, the lyrical content. And that's certainly my experience, too. You know, I think... The two bands that were really political that affected or influenced me a lot were, you know, when I was a teenager, was Rage Against the Machine and System of a Down were both very, you know, very political. But then I also wonder too, like, I guess even the lyrical content, I guess it can be kind of limiting too, because I think that, like you said, with electronic music or other stuff, there is music that does have a very political bent to it, but it's not, it is instrumental, like there's no lyrics. So like, I also wonder about that. Like, is it almost too limiting to say, or maybe it's just that, when it's lyrics, it's just more apparent of what the politics actually is. I guess that's maybe part of it.
I think so. And then, I mean, I think it's always important to look at like the context that music emerges as well. So like, I think something that's interesting is how songs are sometimes also like stripped of their political context too. Like an obvious one would be Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, which is like you constantly hear it played at Republican rallies in the US, and like that's a profoundly anti-war song, right? That like, I'm sure every time Bruce hears about that being played at Republican rallies, it's like, oh my god, idiots don't get it. Or like, to cite another maybe more recent and Canadian example, whatever, I mean, not that borders mean much there anyways, but you had Kanon's big hit, the Waving Flag song, it was being played by these racists at one of those like anti-M103 rallies in Toronto. And then I guess Kanon got news of that and took to Twitter and had some pretty funny kind of, he was like using satire to make fun of those people. It was like pointing out that it's like, okay, hello, like a Somali refugee who came to Canada. It's like, he wrote this song. And like, whatever, it's like, you know, that song was like, obviously was used as like the Coca-Cola commercial, like during the South African World Cup, which like in itself was like a huge clusterfuck disaster. So I think, you know, people like Kanon, and I think this is what also what's really important to kind of talk about too when we're talking about political music, is like none of these artists are perfect, right? And I think that's, you know, for people like myself who's like a radical activist, I think we kind of have to like understand that sometimes and accept the fact that like artists are like complex people. Like I always think of someone like Beyonce, right? Who like a lot of like her politics really disgust me. Like I was really disappointed, although not surprised at all, when she like came out as like a huge Hillary supporter in the last elections. You know, her and Jay-Z like put on like a massive benefit for the Democratic Party, and that sucked, you know. But it's like, you also like, of course you have to recognize that like she's hugely iconic and inspirational to young Black folks and to Black radicals and the stances that she does take, you know. Like her performance at the Super Bowl, like that stuff does have an impact. And so it's like, I just think it's important for people to not throw the baby out with the bathwater too, and accept the fact that like, yeah, I mean, you know, one day you might have an artist that's going to say something that you love, and the next day they're going to say something that you hate. And, you know, I think that it is for sure important to challenge them on these things. You know, I always think like when an artist that I really love, accepts a gig to play in Israel in defiance of the Palestinian boycott, it's really upsetting. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm gonna like never ever again go to one of their shows or like completely stop listening to their music. No, but like I am gonna try to engage them on it, as you know, from the perspective of like a fan and someone who listens and cares about their music. It kind of has a bit more of an impact when you engage like as a fan rather than someone who's just kind of like sitting on the sidelines, yeah, so to speak, you know. It also just makes me think of like, you know, when Dave Zirin was here in Montreal, we were talking about the most recent Super Bowl halftime show with Lady Gaga, and a lot of people were really expecting, of course it was like the first Super Bowl after like Trump took over the White House, and so like a lot of people were expecting her to make a statement. And you know, Dave Zirin like wrote this kind of like glowing piece afterwards. It's like, oh, like, you know, the Super Bowl halftime show was like full of like radical politics. I don't know if you use the term radical politics, but like these like anti-Trump messages. And for me, I was a little bit disappointed with like Lady Gaga's performance, because I felt like she probably could have done way more. I was like, these are really urgent times and you have to put your money where your mouth is, especially if you have millions and millions of people watching you. But then he kind of like, again, like Dave Zirin turned around, he's like, well, you got to like look at the fact, like, you know, she sang her song Born This Way, which I guess is like a bit of an anti-bullying anthem, but also like has a super like pro-queer message. And like the fact that she performed that at the Super Bowl, when you have these like awful like homophobes like Mike Pence who are in power now, it really does send a message, you know. Like how far that message will go in terms of challenging the power, I think that's like another question. But artists definitely are like at least putting these messages out there.
I find it really interesting when like those radical politics do like seep into like mainstream music, like Lady Gaga, or like for example, like Elton John just recently came out in favor of BDS.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he's actually played a benefit in Bethlehem, because I guess he was asked to play in Israel, and he came out and condemned the occupation and said he was in favor of BDS, and ended up playing like a Palestinian show in Bethlehem, or is set to play. I don't know if the show actually happened yet, but yeah, he released like a statement in favor of BDS, which is like, you know, I generally don't look to Elton John as being like an overtly political artist. But I thought that was a pretty awesome, thing to happen, right?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about that.
Aaron, maybe if you just want to give the listeners, where they can find you and how they can, get the Rebel Beat and all that information.
Sure. So, probably the easiest way is just through our website. It's rebelbeatradio.com. And then we're on all the social media as well. So you can find us on Facebook at the Rebel Beat or angusfacebook.com/Rebel Beat Radio, on Twitter at Rebel Beat Radio. If you kind of stumble on the Firebrand Records website, firebrandrecords.com, you can also get it through there. And then you can subscribe to the podcast. It's up on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud as well. What else am I forgetting? TuneIn, Google Play. It's
all there.
Everywhere.
You've been listening to Radio Free Winnipeg on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Hopefully you've enjoyed the show.
You can check us out online at radiofreewinnipeg.tumblr.com.
If you want to contact us, you can email us at radiofreewpg@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter at radio_free_WPG.
Thanks for listening and stay tuned to CKUW 95.9 FM.
Coming up next is Talking Radical Radio.